Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. We are back for 2024. I hope you had a good break, holidays, Christmas, New Year's, all of that stuff. I hope you got your ducks in a row for what is going to be a very busy year for all of us, 2024. I see how things are shaping up. It's going to be a mad one. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, I know how you are. I mean, we're together all the time. You're wonderful. You're superb. You're back
Thanks.
In training.
Yep.
Won your last fight.
Yep.
How are you feeling about that?
Feel pretty good.
Yeah?
Felt like I could have done a bit better, but but at least I didn't lose.
Well, you didn't lose, no. You didn't lose. And she was massive as well, wasn't she?
When yeah.
I was when because I watched the weigh-ins on a live stream, and I, like as you faced off, I was like, have they switched her for somebody else? Like she was big, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Big and strong.
Especially compared to like how she was in the hotel before the weigh-in.
When she was cutting weight. Yeah.
Yeah. To then when she was in the fight, I looked over and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, she filled out. She
big
was strong.
Big lady.
Yeah. Good performance though. 2 wins last year.
Yes.
Aiming for 3 this year, maybe?
Yes. That would be cool.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Nothing booked yet though. Nothing booked yet. We'll let
no,
you know when it
I
is.
I just go on Instagram every day and I see like fight announcement. And I'm just like, when am I going to get my little email? I just check my phone, like.
Yeah. Okay, where are we starting? So UFC 297, not the best of cards, if I'm honest. I feel like this is a little bit like, it's a little bit like having a birthday close to Christmas. It's never going to be a massive celebration because UFC 300's coming up, which is Christmas Day. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this
yeah.
is like a late December birthday. Because like they're saving the majority of the best, like they're pretty much hoping that the Sean Strickland Duplessis drama is going to carry this card, and I mean I kind of think it is. I kind of feel like that's why they were sat so close to one another at that event the other day. It was there was something very kind of Macho Man Randy Savage about the way that he kind of jumped on him and was like doing the kind of pro wrestling punching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like,
yeah, I get what you mean.
I'm like,
so
I'm kinda,
he like jumped over as
yeah.
well. Did you see as well? Because like Brandon Moreno was sat there and his wife, and the way he like moved her and protect her, I was like, yo.
And whose kids was it? He told them to move out of the way.
I think it was Gilbert Burns, like
Brilliant.
Family or
it was,
something.
Was it?
Yeah, no, but like. That you got to zoom in to see how Brandon Moreno went whole like kick ass superhero.
can't challenge that man's family. He would he'd take them both out. I have confidence in Brandon Moreno. So today, before we get into it, we are sponsored by Vortex. Our friend Paul Reed did amazing work through the last all the way through last year for us, getting us ready for the fights and stuff, and just kind of offers everything like comprehensive sports performance. What's the website? Sports Performance.
It is combatsportsperformance.org.
There you go. I mean, it's all in the title, isn't it? Anything you need for combat sports performance, go and check them out.
Yeah, you can get tested and stuff. Especially, I feel like a lot of fighters don't really know, sometimes aren't too sure about their weight class.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, what weight class you could be? Because you always have a coach who looks at you and is like, you should be a one something something. And you're like, based on what? But in this you have like the science to back it off, and
there we go,
back it up and like and really see where, and also just several things, because he measures like resting metabolic rate, the hydration and all of that, and from that he kind of starts your camp on, and there's different things that you can do. You don't only have to check that. You could also do a strength conditioning program. I personally do. I did all the tests, and I'm doing both with him now, and it's great, because especially at the point I am in the division, there's room for flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of like options, and it's just very flexible the way it's approached. It's not like lettuce and no carbs.
No, it's not. You were eating a lot all the way through training camp and fight week. Like
yeah.
There are photos on your Instagram. You got to get this because there are going to be people listening on headphones, and it's going to keep changing volume for the poor people.
Because you keep pushing the mic.
Well, no, it's because you keep looking over at the camera. You see,
yeah,
watch.
Interact.
Yeah, I know, but watch.
Know?
I know, but watch. See, I like drift around the microphone.
That's why
like
you
that.
Always bang on
yeah,
that.
But
and then we start off. So what would people rather hear? It drifting away silently or back.
It's like watching motor racing from the stands. You know what I mean? Like every now and then you get just a little bit.
Have you ever went and watched it?
No, I don't watch it.
So how would you know?
You might better watching it on TV and then you get the whole part of the race. So you don't just miss parts of the race. When the cars are
okay,
near
so
you.
The little bit that I did that was very small in comparison to how long you've prolonged that.
But this is going to be like an hour long podcast. We're doing the whole main card, so I'm channeling the people who are listening. And I'm feeling they're going, she needs to get that mic in front of her.
Never has anyone said anything about
that's because they're scared of
mic.
You. That's
no, they're
scared
not.
Of you.
No, they're not. They've never
I'll
said anything about
she
them.
She is terrifying, I know, but I know.
I'm a nice person.
You are a nice person. You said that in a real threatening way. I'm a nice person.
All right, let's get
okay,
to it.
Okay, so Vortex and also Outlaw Rum. You know I love this stuff, and it is Rum Sunday, so I'll be opening this later. Although, I'm always a little bit precious. This is one in 1,004. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? It's precious.
We got
it's limited.
The sample when we went up, didn't we? So you can have that and not touch the bottle.
Well, I know, but
but then you should probably.
But it's just it's the first. I could do. Hang on.
Oh, you're gonna do it.
I'm just gonna do the that bit. That's the bit I love. That's when you know you're cracking open. Oh, that's gonna be delicious. I know it's delicious already because I've already tried a bit of it. But Rachel's Cask. It's the new limited edition Outlaw Rum. Make sure you check it out. Outlawrum.co.uk. The standard one, the double cask. They're both fantastic. This is a special spin, so these have been distilled in whiskey casks, so it'll be slightly sweeter than a normal rum, which is I'm getting excited thinking about it. We need to get through this podcast so I can get that actually in a glass, because I'll stick with tea for now. Otherwise, your picks are going to be better than mine anyway, because you're smashing it on the Moller thing.
I am smashing it. I'm getting 80%, and the thing is I don't want to jinx it. 80%, and now if I get bad picks here, it'll be sad. People in the Picks podcast are going to be like, what's up, man? You do it only good for the Mahler people. What about us?
Yeah.
I don't want to let you down. It's probably Dan's influence. On the Mahler, I don't ask him anything.
You don't. You can't. You can't. It's,
okay. All right. Come on.
Okay. All right. So, well, the undercards, there's some interesting fights on it. The one I'm most excited about, two in particular. Gillian Robertson against Pollyanna Viana. I think that's going to be a really interesting one. And I think given their level of grappling, I'm hoping we get some grappling out of it, because I think we'll see a high level of women's jiu-jitsu, which I do feel, and we've talked about this a lot, it's different to men's jiu-jitsu. Mm. Like the dexterity in their hips, flexibility in their midsection, etc., the twisting, and I expect that to be a really good grappling match if they start trading.
I expect
trading.
Twisting and stuff from Pollyanna, but more high-pressure wrestling-type grappling from Robertson.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think maybe that will kind of flatten out sometimes the dexterity.
Yeah.
Because she knows where to apply the pressure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. her grappling is very, it's very MMA-specific, isn't it? But who was it that armbarred Gillian Robertson from guard? She got armbarred.
Wasn't it Bueno Silva?
It was Bueno Silva.
Yeah, it was Bueno Silva.
It was a while back, though. It must have been.
Yeah, it was. The thing is.
Oh, yeah, a long time.
Bueno Silva, she has really good, like, snap submissions, and sometimes they catch you, like, by surprise. And I think that's a loss that Gillian Robertson probably hates, especially because she's a grappler to get.
Well,
they're
two weight classes. There's a weight class separating them now, isn't there? Because Bueno Silva's gone up and Robertson's gone down. I think that's going to be a good fight. I also, of course, think Charles Jourdan's going to be really good. And
he's funny as well. His Instagram's hilarious.
Yeah, he is. And Woodson's kind of an odd, awkward, not sure exactly what to expect from him. I always feel like I underestimate him, but he's like a constant. And that's where I think he's going to be an interesting test for Jourdan, because he kind of peaks and troughs in his fights. He can be quite chaotic and explosive. And
well, in the last Canadian UFC, all the Canadian people won.
Mm.
So I wonder if this is gonna.
Oh, that's true.
You know, if this is gonna influence them and
that's
stuff.
That's true. Well, he's not technically a 3-fight win streak, because he's got that draw to Saldana, but Zalal is a good person to have beaten, even though it was a split decision. That's the kind of energy that he's going to be getting from Jourdan. That kind of that fast in and out movement to deal with body shot. That's the one I was trying to think of against Colin Anglin. punch to the body.
Yeah, I feel like Jordan is really kind of more like finding stability in there. You know, like sometimes you go through this transitional process of like, it's a bit like when submissions, mm-hmm. when you almost had it, but you didn't. And then, you know, the fight ends and you end up losing a decision. And if you would have gotten it, it would have been like, oh, wow, this person's amazing. But since you almost got it,
yeah.
people are like, oh, yeah, but you lost.
Yeah.
And now he's like, he's getting it. Not in the submission sense, but in the sense of MMA in general.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, what I will say is if I was designing a human being that would be ideal for guillotines, it would be Sean Woodson. And Charles Jourdan's got a good guillotine. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, just looking at his typology picture, I feel mean.
He's got no, but he's like, you know, you've got to take into account the physiology of your opponent and how that offers potential.
No, you do, right? Definitely. You definitely do, man.
We're always looking at people and going, like, I often like to...
How far apart are your eyebrows?
something that I used to notice quite a lot, especially when I was doing the Inside the Octagon shows and I was just focused entirely on one fighter, is I would notice from one fight to the next the scar that had appeared.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And
yeah.
Like, what's his name? Yoel Romero's got a scar down the middle of the back of his neck.
And the one that you point out from Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, he's got, I think he had a motorcycle accident or something, or like something, but he's got a scar in his midsection and he's never really been able to take a good shot to the body. It's always been a something that was targeted.
You just don't want to fight somebody with a big forehead. Because you punch that
the
wrong,
shining yes. off it, and ping, ping. Yeah, I know.
It can hurt, and they always like dip their heads. So it's just like forehead, forehead, forehead.
Yeah,
yeah. No, he's got like a big forehead.
Yeah, no, I agree. Ideal for guillotines and flying knees, which is what Jordan's all about. Anyway, let's get onto the main card. So we're kicking off with Arnold Allen against Movsar Evloev, and I wish I could get really excited about this fight, but I kind of feel like this is going to be a really, really rough night for Arnold Allen. Like, I know how good Arnold is. I know how.
Oh, you're breaking my heart.
I know. But I'm always going to tell you what I think, as opposed to what I want to happen. I would love to see Arnold Allen come out on top and get back on track. I know how disappointed he was after that Max Holloway fight, but Movsar Evloev is a horrible fight for everybody. Everybody.
Yeah.
He's insistent on his takedowns. He's constantly
master
changing.
Of sport in Greco-Roman.
There you go. So that's Greco-Roman. So that's manipulating the upper body of a person, because you can't do anything. You can't grab below the waist,
mm-hmm.
unless I think in ancient times where you could grab the testicles.
I didn't go that far into detail.
Jamie's nodding. Jamie's like, "Yep, that's true."
Is that the one you're into?
Yep. I've been to the Leicester Greco Club. First thing they did was grab my nuts.
What's wrong with you? Ed also has a degree in computer programming and law.
Well, there
like,
you go.
Not only.
There you go.
It's maybe like, he's what, a robot. Like,
in between training sessions, you know?
I just, yeah. Like, I mean, he's very well in shape.
Yeah.
He puts pressure on his opponents to where they're like, oh my God, get off of me.
Yeah, he's exhausted.
Plus, he's smarter than you.
Like, that is frustrating.
I know, right? Like, what do you have against this guy? You just look him up and you just feel like you're not accomplished. No yeah. matter how accomplished you are, you can look it up, you know? And you're
The thing is, I wish, like, there's been times in his fights where we've kind of got a little bit like of his personality. Like, there's been certain times where, like, when he first came into the UFC, so he came in from M1 Challenge, 10-0 he was, made
yes.
his UFC debut on the Overeem Olenek card.
As a featherweight.
I think I'm pretty sure I called that fight, at least his first couple of fights anyway.
Yeah.
And he just never stops. He's constant. He never seems to get discouraged. We watched that Hitman 47 the other day.
Yes.
He's got that kind of mentality where it doesn't matter if he fails 5 takedowns. He's going to get the 6th takedown and he's going to hold you down for a bit. And if you scramble back to your feet, he's going to keep working on you. He's got good striking as well. He's got a horrible pace. Oh, man.
Tie clinch, the uppercuts
right.
are really nasty as
yeah.
well. Do you think, and this is like a question that I have sort of, is... You know, with wrestlers, do you think that because with takedowns, if you see wrestling as a sport, people do fail it, and it's not really like failed it's a chain of something that you have to attempt the higher the level gets. I mean, that's like saying every punch that I throw is like a failed to punch.
Yeah, when if you don't knock them out, then it's a failure.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. And that's something that I think is a bit weird on the stats is like failed takedowns.
Well, this is where I feel like they need to engage somebody like Daniel Cormier, because there's a few times where he'll mention something like they'll see like a takedown pop up on the stats, and he's like, "That's a mat return. That's not a takedown. Like that's a continuation of the previous attempt to take them down, where it, you know, they never released control."
Yes. Yeah.
You know. So I definitely feel like, but I feel the same thing with striking as well. Just kind of general overall, I feel like MMA could be better quantified. Like people need a better understand of, like, how many times do you see them counting, like, strikes that have missed when the person never intended to land it? It was to set something else up.
Yeah, you know, of course. What I mean? Of course.
And then, like, this, the whole kind of, like, is it a significant strike or does it count to their total strikes? And, you know, what's significant and how can you tell it's significant sitting in a truck outside the arena? You know what I mean? Like, I often feel
some
that.
Some people have, like, such a great poker face as well. Like,
yeah. But even sitting cage side, you know what I mean? Like, we've got like these guys at the PFL events, like there was in Dublin, and they're sitting there with, like, I mean, basically like Xbox controllers, and they're like they're keeping track of the strikes on that, but they're watching on a screen and there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I feel like to better quantify, and this is something that, like, I know a lot of people are working on, and like we've helped out in studies for it, like the mouth guards that track the power and the velocity, something in the gloves, in the wrists of the gloves. Like, I've got those, what they call the punch trackers, the ones that sit in the wraps, and they count like the number and the power in. Like, surely
there's
something.
I just think technology wise, we might be a little bit away from it, because they tried to do the same in Taekwondo. And I remember that, you know, they brought in the chest gears because they were having the issue of like whether it was blocking the arm, what counted, what didn't.
Yeah.
And then they added sensors to the feet and then to the chest pad. And then it was like the way of the impact was weird. So people got good at scoring on that and not on actual Taekwondo, if that makes sense.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like, it really changed the sport in. Well, it did. It changed the sport completely, which, as you know, something like that would. But what I meant to say is, like, that Greco-Roman type of approach, when you're going for takedowns and you're used to this mentality of like hustling for more takedowns, and he shows that. And sometimes I don't feel like that from strikers who do takedowns.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that, oh, this is pretty normal. They're just like, oh, I failed a takedown. That's a failed attempt.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to say, I shouldn't even wrestle.
Yeah.
And like with wrestlers, because you know that's what they're going to do. Even if they fail, you don't think you failed a takedown. You think, oh, you're doing what you do.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
And I think that applies to the way that he applies his pace,
mm-hmm.
and that he looks at a fight and the way he steps in there with it. But I feel like Arnold Allen is somebody that does put on a pace, and he has a really different left hand. Like, sometimes he throws it so straight. Other times he kind of, you know, like, wings it a bit.
Hooks it, uppercuts, over the top.
Yeah. But and when you see him in a short, tight exchange where he's going, like, left, right, really whipping his core to generate a lot of power, you think, oh, okay, this guy only throws hooks. But then you see him in the open – to throwing like a ultra straight punch, which is very hard to throw.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the harder punch is to throw is that like straight one for some reason. Because you throw so much with it.
Yeah.
And he's somebody that I see like that has those different left hands that is really good. And
yeah, he's got like the way that he stands. He's very kind of old school boxer in his posture, but his feet are very very much kind of. Like modern MMA.
Yeah, like, you know, he really commits with his punches.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
He's not trying to score sometimes. You see him, and he takes more risks because, like, when he got, like, knee-dropped by Dan Hooker, it was because he was just seeing red. A bit like how Nathaniel Wood fights, or, like, used to fight a lot more back then than mm-hmm. in comparison to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't done the stats, have I? I'm just looking at their records. Like, Arnold Allen is 19-2, which is an incredible record. But then obviously you look at his opponent, whose record is Hang on, I'm on Wikipedia. I'll switch over in a second.
17-0. With 7 wins in the UFC, but all by decision.
All by decision, yeah. Which is, like, that's frustrating. I would want to see more finishes out of him, especially because he's so controlling, you know? Like, his fights are generally so dominant in big portions that I feel like he should be able to instigate more finishes.
Yeah, I see that. But then when you try and instigate a finish, then you get outside of that drowning pace.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Because you can be like, and kind of just like devour somebody that way. But if you then go to like attack it, then you leave yourself maybe open to a counter.
Yeah, I see. So this is interesting. I was just wondering whether, because this is obviously this would be his first 5-round fight in the UFC. He's not had a 5-round fight in the UFC before, but if you go back to his last finish, it was 21 seconds in the 5th round. So like it might be the case of we're gonna see him dominate him for 15 minutes until he gets into a 25 minute fight, and then that extra 10 minutes end, is where he's finishing. Well,
some people
comes.
Are like Chito Vera is like that. Yeah. Like towards 4th and 5th round is when it really just all starts to show.
So he's got finishes early, but obviously the level is a lot lower considering who he's up against now. I mean, he's exhausting him. What he did to Dan Ige, and that was what I was saying a minute ago. Like there were a few times we got a little bit of personality out of him. Mm. You know what I mean? I feel like because of the language barrier, I would find him more interesting if I kind of knew more of the way that he thinks. Because he's a scary dude.
Don't think I would like think of the same IQ level as him. You know, he would be like lower down.
He might be quite sarcastic. You know what I mean? He might be quite.
Yeah, so he'll poke fun at me all day. You already do that.
Okay, Arnold Allen, 19-2. Movsar Evloev, 17-0. 1-inch height advantage for Arnold Allen. 2-inch reach advantage for Movsar Evloev. Takedown output is insane. 4.71, 50% accuracy, which is mad. That's a very high output. Arnold Allen's got 76% takedown defense, but it's not the first, second, third, fourth takedown that gets you, is it? It's the potentially the fifth in this kind of scenario. Both got the same submission average. The one thing I do think might be a deciding factor in this fight, and I don't know whether it's going to work for him or against him, is that ninja choke guillotine that Arnold Allen uses. He got Mads Burnell with it, and he got Alan Omar with it as well.
Mm.
Like, as he's defending takedowns, he just casually slides that arm underneath the neck.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it, even though it does those type of takedowns, because he really grabs the back and he just returns you to the mat like that. So
that's true. That's the
then
Greco
your next
thing.
Yeah, not really.
Is it really? Yeah, is that the rain?
I was just like, what is that?
Well, that sounds like hail. Damn.
It's raining. It's not. It's not like. I was like, Jamie, come on. Jamie had to tell me it was raining right away. But what's interesting is on Tapology, it's 62% Allen, 38% Evloev.
But is that
Evloev?
Is that wishful thinking though? Because I feel like people kind of want to see Arnold Allen get back on track. He's a really likable guy. He's, you know, they saw him have a hard 5 rounds against Max Holloway, and he was almost there, but he wasn't quite. Do you know what I mean? And then the potential of Movsar Evloev is going to be on a body lock for 14 or 15 minutes.
Yeah, but Allen has he has the conditioning to match, and he also has this like crazy dog pace.
I'm not saying that.
Sprint, stop.
I don't think Arnold's going to get tired. I just don't know if he's going to have like the counter wrestling ability to be able to deal with someone like Evloev. Yeah. That'd be my concern. Like, I know he's been in Canada, right? He's been training at TriStar.
Yeah, TriStar. He does a lot of his camps at TriStar.
Yeah, he's going to have good people. He's going to have really good people there. But like the level of Evloev's MMA wrestling is elite, and it's difficult to find those kind of training partners. It would have been useful to go and train with someone like Sarukian.
Mm.
You know? Like someone that has been on the mat since they were a kid and has got that kind of constant can't discourage and, like, them awareness chain wrestling.
Of chain wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
So who are you going for?
I'm going for Arnold Allen.
What? I was going to go for Allen.
Oh, so we've got to go opposites now.
No, we don't have to go opposites, but you've been talking either way, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to go for Allen.
Yeah. Well, because my pick can be whatever it wants to be. It doesn't.
No, it has to be like...
who I think is going to win.
Yeah.
Like, really, like...
really. You can't... you got to give the people a good pick. This is serious business. If you don't think it's serious, business, you should go on the Instagram of somebody that was a favorite and lost. Y'all are mean.
Yeah.
Like, real mean.
You were the one that put me in that position.
No, but seriously.
Yeah.
Okay. Who are you going with? Serious.
Yeah, no. Like, I've really, like, I just feel like, I feel like Ivlev's going to be on him for like, 12 minutes, and it's going to be exhausting and frustrating, and we're all going to be sitting there going, oh, this is exactly what we hope wouldn't happen to Arnold, and this is what's happening.
So you're going either by decision?
Yeah, I think I am.
Okay.
I want him to prove me wrong though, Arnold.
I'm going to go Arnold Allen, second round knockout.
Oh, I like your pick.
Yeah. He's going to get that Canada power. although he's, you know, British.
Maple syrup in your face.
Yeah.
How about it?
Moose it up.
Poutine. That's it. I know nothing else Canadian aside from that.
Say thank you.
Joyce Saint-Pierre.
All right. I'm going Arnold Allen.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Chris Curtis versus... you're gonna
move past before I get time chance to change my mind. I feel like that, like it wounds me to.
If
to
somebody
pick
would just
Arnold.
Go, they didn't want to hear you talk. Let's say they just wanted to hear your picks.
Okay.
And they would hear you say Arnold Allen after, if they would have heard you say everything else, clearly you were leaning towards the other guy, then you would do a disservice to the people. I just want to skip forward you talking, not about.
Well, then if they're skipping past me talking, then that's their issue, isn't it? It's not mine.
Sounds like a trick in there.
See, another thing that I will say that adds to my concerned and reluctant prediction that Ivlev is going to win a decision is that they've put this fight next on the card.
Yes.
Because Chris Curtis, Marc-Andre Barrio is like, it's okay, we'll recover the mood in the room because that last fight was not what you wanted to watch for 15 minutes. It's a frustrating one, I know, but these two guys are going to stand in front of each other and one of them is going to try and push the other one back. It's going to be an absolute banger. You've got Marc-Andre Barrio, who was what, a double champ in... what's the promotion? Is it LFA? I can't remember. He was a double champ in...
TKO, the Canadian one. Yeah.
Nicknames Power Bar. Constantly
great
moving
cardio.
Forward, great cardio, can tough it out in the first round, can deal with big shots, is very, very good under pressure in high volume situations. Chris Curtis trains with Sean Strickland. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to find someone that's going to prepare you for the pressure that you're going to be under for 15 minutes against Barrio, you kind of can't find anyone better than Strickland.
Yeah.
You know? The problem with Curtis sometimes is that he can get outworked early. And the fight can get away from him a little bit, you know?
I felt like that. And then he gets sometimes a bit frustrated, like when he fought Jack Hermanson. And I remember before he fought him, I was thinking, I think Hermanson might be able to do it because he would just be like, awkward, bam, 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 pin you with shots, wah, bam.
Bam.
And then Curtis being like, all right, dude, but let's fight. Come on. Stop doing all your weird stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that happened. And then in the end, he was all annoyed. And I'm like, yeah, dude, but, you know, I get it. But also, what do you want me to score?
Yeah. See, I kind of think, and what's interesting is that their strikes landed per minute is not too dissimilar. Barrio is slightly higher, 5.95 compared to 5.36 for Curtis. But I feel like this is going to be like two punches to one in favor of Barrio. He's going to be the one throwing the majority of the volume, and Curtis is going to be looking to Philly shell, defend, and counterpunch, and try and catch him with something powerful that's going to negate the fact that he's being hit with more punches than he's landing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and it's the if he lands, that's the big question, because I kind of feel like Barrio can wear him down. I kind of feel like the persistence of Barrio can wear him down. But
especially Canadian fighting in Canada. Yeah. You know, you don't want to let your whole country down when you're there.
Yeah.
And then you live there and you got to think, oh, I lost in Canada. Wow, I let everybody down. That's heavy, man.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Something else that might be useful is adding in some grappling, some wrestling, even if he's not successful. Like, Barrio's grappling's not, you know, he's, what, 25% takedown accuracy. He's not known for grappling a lot. Mm. But I feel like if he started to add that in, the chaos of that additional...
Yeah, he's really dangerous with those elbows when he gets on the ground and pound.
That's a good point.
Yeah, the elbows really like cut people up. And versus Marquez, you saw a tie clinch elbow to uppercut, which is, yeah, right hand a little bit predominantly when he goes and doubles up. And the ref was just like, should we let this continue? Why not?
Yeah. Which way do you think it's going to go? I'm just looking forward to this one. I just think this one's going to be a real, really fun fight.
The thing is, I feel like either Chris Curtis kind of gets like a second round knockout or almost does and...
loses a decision.
Yeah, because the other guy just came up on top like crazy.
Yeah. Hang on. Look, did I do... I didn't do their tell of the tape. So UFC stats has got them. Chris Curtis, 30 wins, 10 losses, one no contest. Marc-Andre Barrio, 16 wins and 6 losses, one no contest. Is that the same on Tapology? 30 and 10.
16 yes.
16 and 6. Cool. Slightly longer average fight time for Marc-Andre Barrio. What's that? A 3-inch height advantage for Barrio, 1-inch reach advantage for... Sorry, no, 2-inch height advantage for Barrio, 1-inch reach advantage for Curtis. It's going to be a bit of a striking battle, this one is. But I do feel like if Barrio can work in some clinch work and some wrestling, even if it's not to score the takedowns, but to initiate something happening, you know, keep Chris Curtis on the back foot and not let him start setting things up. I think Barrio is going to take a decision here.
I'm going to go for Chris Curtis.
Oh, yeah. Another knockout.
Yeah.
Yeah. What round?
Maybe second or third. Like sort of later on.
Yeah. See, I
he didn't look too good versus Nasruddin though. Before that head clash, I felt like Nasruddin was winning that fight.
Yeah. Bit more elusive than Barrio though.
Yeah, Barrio, like, he's just... Yeah, I'm going to go for Chris Curtis.
Okay. I kind of feel, yeah. I feel like Barrio just might...
Skill-wise, I feel like Chris Curtis should win.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, no,
technically I'm, polished.
Yeah, I think he's got a good fight IQ based on his training with Strickland and that style of training anyway. I mean, you know, what, he's had 40 fights. He's had a lot of training camps, a lot of sparring sessions. You can tell he's got that kind of wise in the gym all the time, sparring up with the young'uns.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can tell he's got that kind of wisdom in his movement, but he does get outworked.
Do you think that might be why, though? Because if you've had 40 fights.
Yeah, I mean, if
you've been training so much and so long that you can just, it kind of just becomes one more.
Yeah, potentially.
And he took so long to get to the UFC.
Yeah. Like, say, and I don't know what his schedule is, but say if he does a Saturday morning MMA sparring session, he might do 8 fives switching opponents. You know what I mean? Like he might have this kind of third gear kind of cruises and coasts, and every now and then he'll catch that shot and he knows that that was probably going to win him the round. And
yeah. You know? But like I said, like, sometimes fighters, when they're like that, like Manel Capé is another one that I find to be like that. Chito Vera is another one that I find to be like that. And they usually get better as the fight goes because it becomes more of like, I'm focused on you fight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
Like, they're wise to
inflicting
more damage onto the person without taking any. So, like, keeping themselves space. You got to imagine, if he does 8 fives of sparring, you don't, like, number two all out.
Because yeah, no,
you know
exactly.
You got number seven that's going to come take your head off.
So he's managing his energy, and he could have, like, an almost subconscious pace that he works at all the time.
Exactly, because he thinks he's going to find that opening, because he always does, and the problem is when he doesn't.
And that's going to be the difference with Marc-Andre Barrio, who's walking out in Canada.
Yeah, I know. That's going to give
15 minutes or nothing. Let's go. Yeah. I'm going barrier by decision. I think he might have some scary moments in the fight, but
it doesn't help that like Chris Curtis is 36. Hey, 36 and
hey,
a half.
Hey.
No, but like what? It's just what I mean to say. He's had 40 fights. Like at that point.
Yeah, look at Jim Miller still kicking ass.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
Even Andre Arlovsky looked good.
Come on, Jim Miller. Okay, I'm going to go Chris Curtis.
Okay, you're sticking with your pick, are you?
Yeah,
Fair enough. Okay, Neil Magny against Mike Malott. So, Mike Malott has got a lot of different skills in his arsenal, right? What are you laughing at?
Mike Malott has a lot of different skills. In my head, I was just like, I wonder how many a lot jokes he's heard in his life. And you just went, Mike Malott has a lot of.
So I didn't even think about it.
Of course I thought about it.
Well, his last opponent was Fugit, wasn't
it? I know, because we did the Fix podcast.
Fugit.
So that's either cool or unfortunate. Depends on, you know, your perspective of life.
So I was taking a look back at Mike Malott earlier today, and I was looking at his record and thinking, well, he's, you know, 10-1, that's a solid record. One loss by knockout, though. Okay, let me have a look back at his record. And then I remembered that his loss was a missed weight at featherweight to Hakeem Dawodu.
Mm-hmm.
He was 4-0. He made his debut at featherweight. He had 3 fights at featherweight, won them all in the first, well, in under 2 minutes. And then he went up to lightweight and won another fight in 90 seconds, and then went back down to featherweight, missed weight by a pound and a bit, and had a good performance against Dawodu. You can find it online. It's there. It's a good scrap. But then he got caught with a shot right next to his ear, and he just kind of, I don't know, he took a bunch of shots standing, and he dropped at the very end. It was an interesting fight. But I watched it back, and I think to myself, this. He must feel so different now as a welterweight.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. He looks like he doesn't look like he could cut to lightweight now.
Yeah. Well, then he fought after a year later. And then after that was like a year and a half later.
Yeah.
And then he didn't fight again until 2020. Because remember, he was one of the coaches. And you would always see him in corners, and you would always see him helping people out. But it was kind of like never his turn until it became his turn. And he ran with that.
Yeah, that's mad. He's got a bit of a crazy record, really, because he's got 2 fights in 2011, 1 in 2013, 2 in 2014, including that loss to Dawodu, then 1 in 2015, which was a draw, 2017, 2020. It'd be interesting to see. Now he's getting some consistency. Like, he's had 2 in 2023. If he can get 3 this year, I think we could really see something quite special out of him. 2 performance of the night bonuses in a row, 2 submissions. He's got a really nice mixed, like old school striking style, side kicks, turning kicks. Mm. You know what I mean? But then also, because
he came from Taekwondo,
right.
So he went from 2006. He started Taekwondo, and then moving. I don't know, started or was in Taekwondo, and then moved into kickboxing, and then wrestling, and then he went on to MMA.
Mm.
So I feel like that's why you can see him have kind of like groups of high level in each skill. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So he's been competing against the best in different ranges.
Mm. And he really studies his opponents. You know, he looks at them and studies them. So sometimes when I'm researching fighters, and I'm like, oh, this kid looks like he's fun up and coming, and he's had a few finishes. And I go on the video, and they're like, yeah, my coaches just look at the video. I don't care. I just train. I'm just like, oh, you're gonna run aground.
Yeah.
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
Pretty soon. Yeah.
You've got to use
your
own brain. You've got to be able to adapt on your own.
Especially because. From the time that guy throws whatever at you to the time it lands on your face to the time your corner tells you about it, that's quite a delay.
Yeah. And they've got to remind you to breathe as well. Can't ever forget to breathe.
And the ones that talk 800 miles an hour. What? Who was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to call anybody out.
He was in Semmelsberger's corner, I think. He was like talking at 100 miles an hour. he was like, you got to do this, you've got to do this.
I'm like, dude, breathe.
I've had people in my corner like that. And I feel like it's, I feel like I've jumped onto a treadmill for 60 seconds between rounds. I'm like start the next round. I'm like, what? What just happened? I need to do. And I'm like terrified of 15 things that I'd not even realized before. Yeah, he was.
he was giving me anxiety.
Yeah, he got real angry at the start of the third round as well. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I am excited about Mike Mallow. He was actually at UFC London, and I remember like seeing a few videos because I thought I was going to interview him, and I didn't end up interviewing him. But yeah, I remember seeing him there. Dude is like always in shape.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. For sure.
Never gets out of shape. But so neither does Neil Magny.
About
longevity.
I know. But as you said, Mike likes to study. He's a person that's going to really research his opponents. There's a lot of Neil Magny to study, and it's not all positive. I mean, he's alternating wins and losses in his last five. You know, I know he's fighting very good fighters, but this to me seems like a vote of confidence from the UFC and Mike Mallott.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, because I feel like they did the same when they gave me Ian Garry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like they did the same.
For sure.
I don't really know much about Neil's life and stuff, but it looks like he's not going through like a fun time.
No, it doesn't.
You know, like it looks like he's going through like stuff outside of fighting, and I feel like that always influences fighters, and that's something that I don't think people take into account that much as you should, because you watch a video of them 2 years ago and you're like, oh, look at him, them do this, and I'm like, yeah, how they were training here, how they're training now, their mentality, it's all, because it's not, we don't have a competition once a month, once every 3 weeks where you see something consecutively. You have it like every 6 months they fight, or every, you know, that gap leads to a lot of what ifs. And
it's, I mean, Neil Magny is always a difficult person to count out, but just the way that this is match made and where it is, I feel like they're really backing Mike Mallott here. The one thing I will say about Mike's style, because he has got a real nice selection of kicks that I do feel could be really useful, especially because he's going to have a real reach at disadvantage. Mm. So, tailor the tape on UFC stats, 28-12 for Neil Magny, 10-1-1 for Mike Mallott. So, a lot more experience for Neil Magny. Average fight times longer as well, 12-40. 2-inch height advantage, 7-inch reach advantage. So, that's why I feel like Mallott's kicking game could be a real useful facet here.
Yeah.
But one thing I was thinking, especially with that sidekick, he seems to be right-footed and he seems to use that lead sidekick a lot to the midsection. That's a really good kick to land. Same with the back kick or a turning side kick or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have 2 6-foot punch bags in the gym here, right?
Yes.
There's the Fairtex one, which is real narrow, and there's the Rev Gear one, which is wide.
Yes.
Right. If I'm doing any kind of straight attacks, side kicks, back kicks, I would much rather be kicking the Rev Gear one because it's kind of Kelvin Gastelum width, whereas the Fairtex one's more.
Come on, he's narrowed down.
He's a very well constructed, broad individual. Is Kelvin Gastelum, and he's very broad.
A French
right?
bulldog meme.
You said that, not me.
Come on,
not me.
You said it. You on said camera. That.
That's gonna be Photoshopped now, and someone's gonna. That's you. Well, I'm just gonna let him know if he asks. But like if you think about it, like there's a much bigger target area for certain techniques against certain fighters.
Yes.
Right. If I'm fighting Kelvin Gastelum, I feel far more confident. I'm gonna land my side kicks and my back kicks because the target area is wider.
Yeah.
Right. He's a broader individual, whereas Neil Magny's very narrow.
Yes.
And there's a real
and you
risk
could
in
slip and then give your back. That's the issues with those side kicks and stuff because you're side on. If you slip that way, bam, Rose Namajunas versus Karate Hottie.
Bam.
Yeah.
Bam.
That's like the dangers. And you see it with like Wonder Boy sometimes, him getting like stifled up against the fence like that. But Mike Mallott, look, he just looks really strong.
Yeah, he does.
Like stocky, like strong.
Yeah, which is mad because he was a featherweight once. Although looking at his record, it was a long time ago now, wasn't it? So strikes landed per minute is obviously higher for Mike Mallott. He's been fighting at a different level to Neil Magny. So, of course, these stats don't really, you know, do the fight justice. But we can expect some neck attacks from Mike Mallott as well. And I think that could be something else that Neil Magny has to be cautious of. especially if he gets, you know, sidekicked to the midsection. Heel catches him in the solar plexus. He goes down, wilts against the fence, and then Mike Malott's on a guillotine or on a rear naked choke straight away.
Yeah. I feel like some people struggle to fight in their like hometown or home country.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because there's a lot of pressure behind that. But I feel like for him, it's like a second or third additional jetpack that he doesn't need in the first place. So, yeah, I really think that's gonna benefit him fighting there. And
which way are you going?
I'm going for, I think Mike Malott is
Malott, gonna, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I think by sub as well. Mm. Something similar, like what always sticks out to me with Neil Magny is like the RDA finish. You know, that like leg kick turn around to like an arm triangle.
Yeah.
That is just, that sticks out in my mind because one, I'm never going to be a tall person, am I? No, fighting anybody, like not even any division. If you tell me go to Adam weight, they will be taller than me anyway. Yeah. But what I'm fighting is really long people that do that. That's what their legs feel like.
That's what she thinks about doing to tall people. Just pulls them apart.
No.
The amount of times.
It's long, so you can you know.
The amount of times we're watching a superhero movie or something and we're going through a fight scene and you're just like, I could just grab her arm and just snap.
Okay. So, some of like the female ones that like just do this and the guy, like a 200 kilo bodyguard guy just like goes down, never gets up again. That's false advertising. Okay. I'm going to tell you something. I've been training for a long time. That has never happened. Never once did I just go like that with puny noodle arms and somebody just, you know, just
flies
went back
out of the way
4 or 5 feet. And I understand that they're superheroes and okay, they have a superpower, but Superman has superpowers and he's still buff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why isn't Superman a scrawny dude?
That's a good question.
So why the female version?
Batman used to be. Oh, like old school TV Batman.
Yeah, Ben Affleck just...
He could barely move.
Yeah, I like Christian Bale more.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you want agility. You don't only want like Brock Lesnar coming up doing it, but you also don't want somebody... You know, you want like a believable thing. Even if it's superhero, you want a little bit believable.
Yeah.
Because... if I think you can't even do some push-ups, how are you going to... So I'm just watching the movie.
Yeah.
Annoyed.
Calling bullshit. People are flying and controlling the weather and stuff. And the thing that you find unbelievable is the width of their
upper arms.
I
hit somebody my weight class as hard as I can. And they still stand in front of me. And I don't have a big weight class. You know, that dude's like 4 times your size. Why you bring this up? I'm done.
Yeah, are you sure?
I'm done.
You sure you feel better now?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Did you pick on that one? You got Mike Malott, right?
Yeah, I've been picked.
You already picked. You've been picked. You've ranted and everything.
Yeah. It's your fault. People are going to be like, why did they bring back the Picks podcast so Veronica can rant? I didn't know she was such like...
It's just to get it out of your system so you don't yell at me later. That's what it's about.
Yeah. Because you hold back when we do these, right?
Why do I?
So people don't think you're so mean.
Oh.
But off camera, any like thing I do like that, bap, boom.
Bap, boom.
Not physical punches. Let me make
Thanks
this
clear. Thanks for clarifying that. Yeah.
Just in case.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Before the UFC clips that out. It goes Dan Hardy.
6 inch power slap. Like, Battle of the Hardys.
I'm only like with words. Okay, next one. Come on, just
on a tangent, and I don't want to linger on this but it was funny because it was like it was briefly mentioned on commentary last night. Bisping mentioned something about power slap, and the other two guys in commentary.
Oh, yeah.
It was like. Like, where's the tumbleweed? Like, it would have been fair to just roll a tumbleweed across the octagon at that time. But just one thing, I object generally to the thing because I feel like it's celebrating something that's far, far more dangerous than what we're doing. However, I don't like the idea of these guys getting a belt. Like, can't they get like a fancy hat or something if they're the champ? Like, it's not like belts I associate with combat sports, and that's not a combat sport. You know what I mean? I kind of like a crown or like
crown.
One of those baseball caps that's got the beers in or something.
Like, or like a big pillow. No. Like a ceramic pillow.
Slapper champ. It just needs something branding on the front, beers on the side, straws going in. That's the way to crown a power slap champion, in my opinion. Not a belt. That's a combat sports thing.
Yeah.
Got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. Anyway. Okay. Co-main event. And just one thing that stood out to me when I was, this is on co-main event.
Okay.
This is for the vacant bantamweight title.
Yes.
But Mara Bueno Silva's coming off a 6-month suspension.
Yes.
How does that work?
She trains at America Top Team and they're like, well, we can build her up.
But like, I'm not saying that she's not one of the fair contenders in the division. But I feel like they would have her fight before, like, she's had a suspension, bring her back and give her a fight, and then put her into a title fight.
Yes.
Like, it was a ADHD medication, wasn't it?
Yes.
So was she suspended because she didn't declare it, or because it's
I think
illegal?
It was because it was still in her system. Because you're but she said, from what I remember, if I didn't get this wrong, like, don't come at me. But, like, I think she stopped taking it at the time that she always stops taking it.
Right.
But then when they had the test, it was still in her system. Although she's been tested and it's not showed up, and it did for some reason.
Okay.
Like, it took longer to get out of her system for some reason.
So it's illegal in competition, though?
In competition.
Ah, okay. Because it was Ritalinic acid.
Yeah,
so it's the metabolites of Ritalin, like the ADHD medication.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I don't know. I don't take ADHD. I don't know anything about ADHD medication.
I wonder how she feels different when she's taking it and when she's not. I wonder if, like, do you know what I mean? Like Nick Diaz with his pot brownie fighting Takanori Gomi pulls out a go-go platter. Like, would he have had the calmness and the peace to be able to find that submission had he not been baking the day before? Do you know what I mean?
Like we've had this conversation
about this particular thing.
Like, not I'm about just, ADHD medication, but no. More about, you know, Nate Diaz's brownies.
Yeah, but people use various different types of things, even like when they're studying. You know what I mean? Like, people at university, they'll use different types of stimulants to help them study or whatever.
And this is because I've been on the same fight card as her, but before she fights, she gets very nervous. I've seen little people get as anxious as she does.
Do you think if she was taking a medication, she wouldn't be as anxious? Do you think that we
maybe, but maybe it's like when you have glasses and, you know, and you take them off and your vision is way worse than if you just wouldn't wear the glasses.
Yeah.
So it feels like a bigger shift. Mm. Maybe it's that. Like I said, I have no idea.
Yeah. I just found it odd that about they were putting her straight in for a title shot. Because
Juliana Pena was like injured or something.
Right.
I think they were going to make it Pena versus Pennington. And then she was injured. So then they made it Bueno Silva. But Bueno Silva kept calling out. I found it a bit weird. I feel like Juliana Pena kind of doesn't do herself any favors sometimes.
Well, this is number two and number three against one another. Like, Raquel Pennington's been, I think this is her 18th UFC fight. She's been around for a while. And in my head, she's always been a boxer wrestler.
Yes.
You know what I mean? She's always been predominantly, okay, let's, like, hands first, few low kicks, bit of wrestling, some takedowns. And she's always been that kind of not been able to get to the belt because Nunes was in the division. Kind of, you know what I mean?
A bit of like...
I don't know. I don't really think this is a good fight for her either, to be honest. Like, Mara Bueno Silva, I don't feel like Bueno Silva is going to be able to take Raquel Pennington down, but I do feel like she's got enough in her striking arsenal. She's aggressive and a bit wild enough. Like, she's very good at just smashing with elbows.
Yeah.
Oftentimes like she you see her wait. Yeah, she's nasty.
She means it.
Like
when she
wades
is.
Into
yeah.
range with those elbows.
And her training videos as well. When she's like doing some sparring with some people, like she hits you like she means it.
Yeah,
and I remember
yeah.
seeing her at like at training and stuff, and that is how she spars. Like she'll be going with her girlfriend who's also in the UFC, and like she's not holding back.
No.
Like crazy, but that might be also because of that shoot the box influence.
Yeah,
that you kind of go that hard in training, and that kind of shows out, you know, later.
Yeah, but I also don't think that you would stick around in that gym if you weren't that kind of person. I feel like
yeah,
like I could see her like jumping on someone in a dispute in a parking lot, for
yeah.
example. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And just be like, you know, like she seems like she's got that kind of that wildness to her.
And how do you think the difference it's made with her going to American Top Team? Because if we look at what I find interesting about this fight is that if we look at Amanda Nunes before she went to American Top Team, although she had won because she lost to like Kat Zingano and stuff, and people were like, yeah, but she's not really, you know, she's not really like the superstar that people wanted from her. And then she went to American Top Team, and then she kept winning and winning and being more nasty and really finding punching power.
Yeah.
By the, I think it was like just the way that she was punching, it shifted slightly.
Yeah, yeah.
And her intent did as well, and she started to knock people out. And I wonder for Bueno Silva how much this transition to American Top Team is kind of similar to that Amanda Nunes story, to where she gets to that point, because she speaks highly of Amanda Nunes. You know, she's like, I have a long way to go to reach her. Kind of like in an admirational sense that she puts her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's kind of like I'm the next version. Yeah. I feel.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that the area where like Amanda Nunes has got good judo as well as good grappling, and I don't necessarily feel like Bueno Silva's got the judo or the wrestling ability that Nunes had, but I do feel like she's better all round with her striking. Not say better. Like Amanda Nunes is probably more effective, but there's a more limited skill set. Whereas Bueno Silva will kick a lot, and she will step in with those smashing elbows. And
yeah, there's a lot of knees in the clinch and more like variety. Yeah,
with those upward elbows. Who was it against? Landsberg.
Yeah,
she kept coming through the guard.
So Bueno Silva, she had this like Muay Thai sort of like coach. This is from what I remember in Sao Paulo when she was training at Shute Box. She had this female like Muay Thai coach, and she was, you know, she was like in your face type of like, go, it's never enough and stuff. And then she'd do the training. She'd come down to Shute Box for the jiu-jitsu aspect of it. And then after training would always stick around and do specific submissions. And if we saw with the Holly Holm fight, the submission that she actually got, she showed it in the first 30 seconds of the fight. And she, you know, she kept returning to it. So she knew it was there, and then she was able to apply it. The same as the submissions that she's gotten over like Robertson. I would say ground game, I would give an advantage to Robertson.
Yeah.
But in snap submissions, Bueno Silva's really good at training the end move.
Yeah, that knee bar against Landsberg was really nice as well. I feel like Bueno Silva's going to do this. I feel like she's going to be she's potentially going to be aggressive enough with striking to be able to punish Raquel Pennington for her boxing.
Yeah.
Low kicks, body kicks, elbows, knees, you know, just kind of generally outpointing her in every range of striking instead of just trying to trade boxing with her. Like sometimes she can get drawn in. I remember Manon Farrow kept walking onto that kick to the midsection, didn't she? She like side kick to the midsection. But I feel like she,
yeah.
I
but
don't feel like
Farrow,
that's problematic
like, can
for her. In
pepper
this fight.
Her from the outside and then come in with a flurry, get herself out of danger.
But Raquel Pennington
is
not,
a bit more
that skill
like,
set.
Like plotty with her attacks.
I think that Raquel Pennington's gonna end up instigating wrestling, and she'll end up getting subbed. I think Mayra Bueno Silva even potentially will get taken down and sweep her, find herself in top position.
You know, what's interesting on Tapology, Pennington says title champion and Bueno Silva's challenger.
Oh, does it really?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I mean, she's been around forever, Raquel Pennington. Like, she was always like top contender in the division, you know, even like Ronda Rousey, Misha Tate time. But she's She just never quite made it over that hurdle of the top three.
Mm.
And I feel like Maya Bueno Silva is potentially going to be.
And what do you think about her change from flyweight to bantamweight? Because I wouldn't say she was a ultra massive. Like Ferro is a bigger flyweight than Bueno Silva.
Yeah. Yeah, but I also feel like Maya Bueno Silva's strength is her output. It's not necessarily her physicality. Like muscle, yeah,
sort of thing.
Like her takedowns against Lena Landsberg. Then they weren't. There's not a great deal of finesse in them. Do you know what I mean? She's still very much kind of move, go and twist and like it's a fluidity thing, which I feel like is more affected if she's trying to cut weight.
Yeah,
and she was struggling with a weight cut, wasn't she?
Mm, yeah.
So like, I feel like, especially from a coaching perspective, I'm like, I would rather you be slightly smaller and be able to fight at the ferocious pace that suits your personality.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with her as well.
Oh yeah, I think a submission, probably third round. That's what I'm thinking. Some kind of neck attack.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, main event.
Main event.
I'm gonna do a war room on this. I'll be recording it right after we've finished recording this, so there will be that as well. But
yeah, but that would be confusing because this is coming out on a Tuesday,
and the
war room's coming out on a Monday.
That's right. So war room's already out. So you probably already watched it. So bonus. Bonus, you get to hear what Veronica's got to say about this as well. And you know she's the picks queen, so you know, you don't want to listen to what I've got to say.
Yeah, but I'm not feeling very confident about this one. This is a weird parallel universe card.
Yes, it is. Welcome to the Twilight Zone.
Sean Strickland versus Dick Russo.
No. Yeah. There's the advert for the podcast right there. Sean Strickland versus...
There was just like...
What?
Okay, Duplessis. I find his name hard to say.
Dricus.
Yeah, Dricus. Duplessis.
Yes.
Duplessis. Let's just call him Duplessis.
Okay. Is Dricus not easier?
Dricus. No. It's not easier.
It's not easier. No. Okay. So
I think there should be 10 names total.
Total.
Yeah.
Total.
That I can pronounce it. I just give everybody.
Yeah. You call people what they want anyway. Like last night we were watching the fight and we had Parsons fighting Smellsberger.
Parsnips.
There we go. Parsnips and Smellsberger.
Okay, but if you look at it and you do this and you don't really read it because it was a long name.
Yeah, Parsons is super long.
Yeah, no, it was just the way Felder was saying his name. I'm just like, is he saying it? What was that? See how many times you could say meow?
Oh, yeah, Super Troopers.
Yeah, see how many times you could say it in the thing?
Do I look like a cat to you, boy?
I think Felder was doing that with Parsnips.
Was he, yeah.
I think so.
You think?
Yeah. You laugh now, but when the fight's going on and I'm saying all these very funny jokes, he doesn't laugh. He's just, I'm trying to watch the fight. And I'm like, okay, so hard being so funny.
You're hilarious, baby.
I'm pretty hilarious.
So Sean Strickland, Dricus du Plessis. Let me do a quick tale of the tape because I didn't do a tale of the tape on Pennington thingy, did I? Well, there's an inch height and yeah, there we go. Jamie's brought it up. There we go. This is an odd fight. This is, it really is. Sean Strickland 28-5, Dricus du Plessis 20-2. Both 6'1", both with a 76-inch reach. This is an interesting fight because I wouldn't watch either of these guys and be like excited about their like martial prowess and their skill. And as you know, from when Strickland was going into the fight against Adesanya, I was very critical of his style. And I still feel like there are lots of areas of his game that can be improved upon, but there's a principle that his style works on. And I think that's really interesting. And there's a style that Duplessis game works on, and I think that's really interesting. And neither of them are particularly aesthetically pleasing. They're not particularly attractive to watch, I don't think.
Mm.
Like Duplessis can look quite untidy a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. He's got awkward movement. And Strickland can look very, I don't know. I'm still trying to get my head around Strickland's style because there's something about him that works very well. And I think what he did against Adesanya is going to work very well against Duplessis as well. Because I feel like Duplessis's got this bounce constantly in and out of range. And I feel like people that are fighting him that aren't confident enough just to kind of walk into range and smother what he's doing, they kind of get caught just on the outside where they're susceptible to him bouncing into range and throwing stuff. And he tends to kind of gallop a little bit and he's got really, really odd movement. So like for someone like Whittaker, he's like standing there like trying to predict what's coming at him. Like, I've got to counter because I'm out of range. I can't move into range because mm-hmm. that's too dangerous. So I'm waiting outside of his range for him to come into my range to try and counter, and I've got no idea what I'm countering, right? With Strickland, because he just slowly squeezes people, I feel like he's going to be able to suppress a lot of that bouncy energy that Duplessis's got, and I feel like he's going to be able to slowly like take space away from him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like times when like Duplessis, he was tired when he was grappling against Darren Till. He was tired at the start of the next round. He was tired when he was fighting Brunson, and Brunson was forcing him to wrestle as well. So I do feel like this, the long game here is going to work really, really well for Strickland. I feel like he can clinch, and I feel like he can be a bully up against the fence, hitting to the body and just kind of stifling Duplessis. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Like this stylistically, I feel like this is a really suitable matchup for Sean Strickland and what he does.
Hmm.
And I think what he does is he's going to be really on display in this fight even more so than it was against Adesanya.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Sometimes I feel like if somebody becomes a UFC champion, there's almost like this aura around them that everything they do is perfect because they're the UFC champion.
Yeah.
And in a sport where there's so many aspects to it, it's nearly impossible to be that. Even if somebody's a champion, it's so hard.
Yeah. They're the best in that moment. They're best
for that fight of that night.
In that moment. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And like, sure. And this is something that, for example, when we saw Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena, the first time they fought, I feel like mentally, Amanda Nunes was in the same similar spot to where Israel Adesanya was, like just exhausted of the mm-hmm. pressure of being champion and all that has come to, and if you look at that, right, you see Juliana Pena beat her and you just think, oh, that's it. The answer is Juliana Pena striking
mm-hmm.
because she beat her
mm-hmm.
because she subbed her, like
yeah.
she's perfect, and then the next fight, Amanda Nunes came a bit more chill, you know, like trained and took it and showed up the way that you do show up. Because sometimes we don't show up and, you know,
yeah,
it just doesn't happen. And then she showcased a really high dominance. So I don't know how much of I feel like Sean Strickland is, and I'm going to get so much crap for this, but just because he won, I don't feel means that what he's doing is the most adequate.
What? No, 100%. It's not. He isn't the best expression of mixed martial arts because he's the champion. He's currently the best expression of mixed martial arts in the division at the moment. But what he brings, like I'm past the point of criticizing him because there's something to be learned about it from his style. But at the same time as saying that, when Anderson Silva was the champion, I was telling people to go and watch Anderson Silva because of how good he was. I'm not going to recommend people go and watch Sean Strickland unless they're a particular type of person. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I could go to the gym where we were the other day and I could pick a couple of people out and I'm like, you like Sean Strickland's fights. Go and watch Sean Strickland. You dig him. Like, because you've kind of got to appreciate who he is as a character. If you're tuning in to see high-level martial arts, I would still always go Anderson Silva. I would still always reference Israel Adesanya. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because there's a finesse to it.
Yeah, for sure. But that's the thing is, what I would expect out of someone that should be able to, like, for example, Alex Pereira, the way that he was able to set him up and open up the opportunity to knock him out.
Yeah.
I don't know that Duplessis's got that complexity in his game. So therefore, I feel like the fire blanket approach of Sean Strickland is going to work because Duplessis doesn't have that level of complexity that I do feel like Israel Adesanya's got. I just don't think he was able to apply it on that night. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a really good fight.
Yeah. This is a really fun fight. It's really interesting because of the drama around it and stuff. But if I'm trying to point out the best version of mixed martial arts I can show somebody, it wouldn't be this fight. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be kind of untidy. It's going to be Duplessis doing wild things.
Seems like it would have been like 20 years ago.
No, because I don't think it was. I mean, even if you go back to like Dave Monet, you know, even if you go back to like the old middleweight champions, Pat Miletich, he was a welterweight champion, wasn't he? Like, you know, Frank Shamrock. Like, you're talking about absolute like ninjas. In fact, let me just pull up the UFC middleweight.
You know what I think was interesting? You remember, what was it, Saturday that we were coming back from training? We were talking about what categorizes a cross and what things are the essence of what makes it a cross. You know, like, first of all, it has to be with your backhand.
Yeah.
And then when you're like, oh, your back foot has to be on the ground, the first person I thought of was Duplessis.
Yeah.
Because most of the time where he throws it, he kind of had already generated the power and he like hops into it and then kind of punch pushes it. You know how you have that front kick where you just like, you know, you hit it
yeah.
or you have the push kick
yeah.
or you have like the snap into it and his punches are like kind of pushed through it.
Yeah.
The way that he did with Robert Whittaker and just the angle that he got him, it kind of like collapsed his nose.
Yeah. That's an Ankalaya punch.
He looks like smiling Sam Alvey.
Yeah.
In his Tapology photo. There's just so much teeth.
So, yeah, like Dave Murillo Bustamante, amazing fighter. Really, really skilled Brazilian jiu-jitsu player. He would have been on the walls on the way down to the blue basement at Henzo's. Murillo would have been. Like, I'm just looking at the history of the middleweight division. Murillo Bustamante, Evan Tanner, Rich Franklin, Anderson Silva for like 55 years. Then Chris Weidman, Luke Rockhold, Mike Bisping, Joyce St. Pierre. I don't know. It's just like I look back at other champions and I'm like, I find it odd that this is the middleweight title. Even though it is, and I big respect to both of these guys. They are the current elite of the middleweight division, but it's an odd expression of mixed martial arts at the elite level. For sure. For sure. I'm gonna be entertained watching it though, there's no doubt about it. I've really come around to Strickland just as a person this year. I think a lot of people have. But his style is still.
I have a dad. I've tried. Okay, I've been through a lot. Still working it out. And then beep.
But the thing is, he's just kind of.
It's like beep, beep, fight, beep.
Oh, is it really? I'll watch it a bit. I haven't watched it yet. Okay, how are you going? How are you picking it?
I like how Duplessis really attacks the calf and the leg.
Yeah,
and I feel like I feel like that might slow down Strickland's blanket approach because he might take
he doesn't really put damage. His lead foot down much though, does he? He's always kind of twitchy on his lead leg. I thought the same thing because it stood out how good he is at kicking the lead leg when he's in an open stance. He's like got this nice whip to the lead leg, but it's just like every time I see that, I see Strickland kind of being on top of him, picking up that lead leg and trying to punch over the top, and Duplessis leaves himself on the center line all the time when he's kicking. Like, he's got a very untidy style, and I feel like he can be punished.
He goes really high with the guard, and people get really focused on headhunting. I saw that from Robert Whittaker, which I was like, why are you doing that? Because he was up here, like really, really high, and kind of okay taking whatever shot because he's like muscularly like thick to cover himself, you know?
For sure.
And I just thought like, oh, why don't you like go to the body just a tiny bit.
But then the question is, right, so because Whittaker wasn't pressuring into that range and then staying in that range, he would pressure in for a moment, Duplessis would reel backwards with his hands covering his head, and then jog himself back into range and start working again, right? Whereas Strickland will fill that space.
And that's exhausting.
That is exhausting. So once Strickland has filled that space, and now you've got Duplessis skirting the edges of the cage with his hands up, and then you've got Strickland searching for the body and stuff. Like, this, I feel like this is where Strickland could really show how effective his style is against someone like Duplessis. Like, I would imagine if Duplessis showed up in Vegas for sparring, it would be Strickland chasing him around the mats, pushing him up against the fence and beating him up. I could picture that all day. But on fight night, I feel like the explosiveness of Duplessis is going to be a different level. And I do feel like that could be threatening for Sean Strickland.
Yeah.
It is a bit of a coin toss because they've both got holes in their game, big holes and big mistakes that they make in different ranges and
things that shouldn't but do work for them.
Yeah.
Both of them are like, it shouldn't work but it does.
Yeah.
They seem a bit like the guy you bring in to spar to see if you're sharp enough for the fight, the skilled fighter.
Yeah.
But not so much not the skilled fighter in the gym.
Yeah.
Does that like they're both in this position, I find it pretty sick. It's pretty cool. It just goes to show you how unpredictable MMA is.
Yeah.
Like there's so many variables, so many factors that it's just it makes the sport exciting for me.
What Sean Strickland's style does is it reinforces something I remember learning like when I was a little kid about being a goalkeeper. Right? Like if you stand on the line in the goal mouth that you're having to defend is really, really wide. Whereas if you get close to the ball, you're going to be far more likely to be able to make contact with it.
Stuff it.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if you think about Sean Strickland's style, he puts himself so into the game of his opponents that a lot, because his guard is out here and he is very twitchy, he's either defending here or stifling here with the lead arm. And he's able to get to stuff before it's really started to generate much power, and that's where Duplessis, in my opinion, is more effective when he's got that space.
Yeah, the space to cover.
Which I don't think he's going to be able to get against Strickland.
And how do you think that being a champion now is going to affect Strickland? Because he just had one of the biggest upsets ever, and he went from, you know, as he said, he went to the arena thinking he was going to leave unconscious. And then he went and he beat the craftsman sort of skill master, and now everybody loves Sean Strickland and his style and the thing that he says. So how
do you think
that's going to affect you? No matter how, no matter, it has to affect you. There's no way it doesn't.
Well, okay. So
if you're human, it affects you.
Yeah. Okay. And if you take into account who he is as an individual, now he's starting to get admiration and respect. He might start thinking to himself, I quite like this, even if he doesn't want to admit it to himself. Yeah, no,
maybe it's not like the, oh yeah, I'm UFC champion, I'm, you know, like I'm, but you,
yeah,
I mean, you like people respecting
for sure
all the hours you put in every single day that seem to not be justified unless, like, you know.
But I would also say though that he feels like he's crafted a style through hours and hours of sparring that is the solution to the majority of what he's up against. You know, like I think
probably
he's
worked
gonna,
against the majority.
Yeah, for sure. I think he would look at the rankings, the people around him in the middleweight division, and the people that are potentially upper division right now, and he'd go, if that person comes back down, I might as well just hand the belt over. And I do think he surprised himself against Adesanya. And like you said, I do feel like it was a bit of a perfect storm, a bit of the Ngannou Fury. Fury wasn't fully prepared for Ngannou, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. Like, of course. That situation, those situations do happen, and I do feel like that was a factor that played in. But at the same time, I feel like Strickland looks at Duplessis and thinks, I beat up guys like him in the gym all the time. Like,
yeah.
My style works perfectly for someone like him who doesn't have a lot of complexity to their game. They're dangerous because they commit, kind of like Johnny Walker. He's dangerous because he's big and powerful and he commits.
Mm.
But at the same time, he doesn't have the finesse or complexity like Pereira did when he pulled the hand away to open up the opportunity for himself. If Duplessis lands, it's because he's thrown a volume and something's gotten through, not because he's created the window for himself.
Yeah, because he kept going with power shots at you.
And I feel like Strickland's kind of solve all style works for 99% of people because he's so on top of them. Like look at what he did to Abbas, right? Abbas Magomedov. Was it Magomedov?
Yeah.
He threw everything in the kitchen sink at Sean Strickland in that first round, and Strickland weathered the storm, walked him down, took everything that he got, and then put it on him.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing I can see happening to Du Plessis. I think he might have a really good opening 3-4 minutes. And then if we see him tired like he was against Till or Brunson, Strickland takes him out.
Mm.
I think TKO. I think Strickland will get to him. Early fourth round.
Oh, can you imagine the post-fight interview if Izzy's going to be there? I'm just ready for the drama.
Of course you are.
I'm ready.
Which way are you picking?
Bring it on. I'm going to pick Sean Strickland.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Cool.
Right, should we wrap it there?
Wrap it there. Sorry for all the tangents, guys. We've missed you. It's been a while.
We have missed you, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Send some comments. I'll reply to you.
Yep. Comments, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. Check out Outlaw Rum. Check out Vortex. Yeah. Awesome. Ah. It's good to be back. Catch you later.